Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, January 26th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MMH to follow federal vaccine rule. 200 unvaccinated employees risk unpaid leave if they miss deadline. By Stuart Doreen. Midland Health found out the outcome of the Texas lawsuit having to do with the federal vaccine mandate for healthcare workers, and it wasn't what they had hoped. Officials said during their weekly press conference that the state dismissed its lawsuit because of a Supreme Court's ruling earlier this month, and the clock is ticking for Midland Memorial Hospital and other Midland Health employees to become vaccinated, have an exemption, or face being put on unpaid leave. Midland Health COO Stephen Bowerman said Tuesday there are 200 employees that are currently not vaccinated or without exemptions, medical or religious. He also said that the hospital's committee that rules on exemptions have approved 99% of all requests, more than 200 as of Tuesday morning. Bowerman also said the following deadlines are in place. February 14th for an employee to receive a first vaccination or to have filed an exemption request. March 14th for an employee to receive a second dose. Bowerman said efforts started last week to connect with employees without vaccinations or exemptions. Earlier this month, the Supreme Court decided to allow the Biden administration to proceed with a vaccine mandate from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Even as Midland Health officials waited for the outcome of a case pertaining to CMS's mandate as to Texas healthcare facilities, leaders said they were ready to proceed with CMS vaccination order. The Associated Press previously reported that the mandate covers virtually all healthcare workers in the country, applying to providers that receive federal Medicare or Medicaid funding. 10.4 million workers at 76,000 healthcare facilities, as well as home healthcare providers. Midland Health employees that do not meet the deadlines that are in place will be placed on unpaid leave for 30 days, Bowerman stated. We are doing everything we can to keep them employed, said Bowerman, who added that no resignations have been turned in during the last week, although there were a few in December. Bowerman said there were 96 COVID patients in Midland Memorial Hospital on Tuesday morning. Midland Health also reported that 230 of the 270 total inpatient rooms available were occupied. That means 41.7% of all inpatients were COVID positive, and 84.5% of all rooms were occupied. We're doing everything we can to help our workforce and to keep them employed here at the hospital and taking care of patients, Bowerman said. We are very concerned about losing staff, and that's why we're trying to work with our workforce to allow them to qualify for the exemptions, medical or religious. This article is entitled NRHA Forum, Horseshoe Big Issue for County Candidates. Precinct 4 Hopefuls Debate Complex Contract Revenue, by Stuart Doreen. Day 2 of the National Republican Hispanic Assembly Forums for Commissioner's Court Candidates featured just one debate, but more contention than the first day. It was the Precinct 4 candidates' turn at the Bush Convention Center, and Diane Anderson and Charles Hall were vocal about their opposition to current seat occupant Randy Prude. Precinct 4 includes most of North Central and Northwest Midland and some older areas in the center of the city. The primary contest will be March 1st. Diane Anderson challenged Prude, especially on horseshoe costs, and then commented that Prude has been a part of a court that, for a quarter of a decade, has, quote, done whatever they wanted without the consent of taxpayers, unquote. She listed multi-million dollar projects at the Midland County Annex, the Midland County Courthouse, and Horseshoe as examples where county leaders used mostly cash on hand. "The money was available, so they spent it," said Anderson, a former Midland ISD trustee. "I can assure you the court will not operate like it has for the past quarter century." Hall also took shots at Prude for spending at the Horseshoe and voting to give commissioners 13% pay raises. He also commented on the spending of millions of dollars on projects outside the typical county budget items, including $10 million to Midland ISD, $2.5 million for Midland Memorial, $3 million to Midland College, $90,000 for Horseshoe events, and $100,000 to Midland County Airfield Foundation for museum support. The latter was part of a 2018 donation of $11.86 million from the county to 10 different entities and organizations, including MISD, Midland College, the hospital, the Humane Coalition, Greenwood ISD, the City of Midland, Keep Midland Beautiful, the Field's Edge, and Chris Davidson Opportunity Park. "Get Randy's hand out of the taxpayer's pocket," Hall said. Prude said he has donated his commissioner's salary to organizations locally and internationally throughout the years. He also defended the Horseshoe Complex spending, credited the court's leadership and the dedication of city sales tax for Midland County, having the lowest property tax rate in the state. Prude also mentioned the work done in bringing water to county residents and raising morale of county employees. The Horseshoe was an area of conversation in the forum, with Prude insisting that the multipurpose complex along Interstate 20 has run in the black during 8 of the last 10 years. It was the first time that a candidate running for office during the forums made that claim. He also said 1 million people have participated in events there. Hall was critical of the Horseshoe operations contract and that the court has stopped any attempts to make changes. Anderson told those in attendance that too much money spent during events at the Horseshoe, including concession revenue, goes to the operator, including more than 60% of beer sales, she said. Both Anderson and Hall disputed the idea that the Horseshoe brings in a yearly profit. The candidates also addressed beautification, trash, water, and what could be done for veterans in Midland County. There weren't many differences in what the candidates said there. Hall is a former constable with 40 years of law enforcement experience. He said he looked forward to working on fiscal issues. Prude says he's been in Midland since 1952, and since he was elected for the first time in 1999, that the average salary for a Midland County employee has doubled. Anderson talked about her experience with Rotary and said a primary issue is the lack of master plans for roads and water. This article is entitled "Chef Chip Height Cooking Up a Legacy in Downtown Midland." Asian Eatery Next in Restaurant Owners' Plans for Local Dining Scene by J.C. Lewis. Opal's Table and the Basement owner Chip Height will not only celebrate Opal's Table's 5th birthday, but will soon open a new restaurant. Height said his ultimate goal is to have all of his business in downtown Midland. On February 5th, Opal's Table will celebrate its 5th anniversary with food, wine, and live music upstairs and at Opal's Table and the Basement. "If I can find the spaces, I think I'm going to stick to downtown," he said. "I think downtown needs to be loved. I've lived here for 8 years, and downtown has seemed to grow a lot. A lot of businesses have blossomed around the park in the last year or so." Height moved to Midland in 2014 after his sister and brother-in-law talked about how the food scene was lacking. He was an executive chef at the Alden Hotel, taught cooking classes, was a personal chef, and launched his own cigar company during his time in Houston. He opened a catering business, and then his first restaurant was Height Foods, a a lunch spot which features pho, pimento cheese, and brisket tacos. During that time, he also met his wife Taylor, who has always supported his culinary dreams. "We rolled into Opal's table naturally," he said. "It feels amazing to be celebrating Opal's 5th anniversary. We are very superstitious when it comes to celebrating anniversaries of restaurants. This will be our first official annual celebration of any kind. It's a good milestone in the restaurant business." The event will have a lot of heavy appetizers and a performance by Grammy-nominated singer Tony Camel of Wood and Wire. Heitz said the food will be dinner-sized portions. Tickets will come with 3 drink tickets, with choice from a glass of Camus or a Manhattan Made, with Doc Swinson's rye whiskey, and a swag bag of Opal's Table goodies. Tickets are available at https://resy.com. Heitz said the last couple of years have been very unusual for the restaurant business. "We opened as a food bank for like 6 months during those 5 years due to COVID," he said. Midland Relief was created to feed first responders, healthcare workers, and others while allowing the restaurant staff to receive a salary. We served about 30,000 meals during that time. Heitz's new restaurant, Mr. Chip's Kitchen, is an Asian fusion in the old Basin Burger location. "Opening an Asian restaurant has been a long-term goal," he said. "Since I was a kid, I wanted to open an Asian restaurant," he said. "We toyed around with the idea of doing something there, but it's so small we didn't follow through. We've been working on doing all these Asian-inspired wine dinners along the way. This restaurant will sort of be the greatest hits of those dinners with some new things added, too." Heitz added that he loves all the Asian restaurants already in Midland, but feels like there is room for one more. His restaurant will feature a variety of dishes, including sushi, dumplings, soup-based customizable noodle dishes, General Tso's, and an Opal's Table favorite, the Teksanyaki chicken, stir-fry vegetables, Teksmati rice with cilantro and peppers. The space has a large grill, which will lend to a robust grilled item list, Heitz said. "So many of these Asian items lend themselves to personalization as far as meat and protein goes," he said. The old Basin Burger, which closed 18 months ago, is getting Heitz's personal retouch with fun, dragon-themed wallpaper and green leather seating. The restaurant will be like Opal's Table and the Basement, with its own Asian flair. The restaurant will also have outdoor patio seating with heaters and TVs. Mr. Chip's Kitchen will also offer counter service, meaning customers order at the counter when they are ready, with the possibility for customers to order from their phones. "This restaurant will be more casual than Opal's Table," he said. "I want to provide a different type of experience that is more affordable. I hope that this is a place where people can go where it's not stressful on the budget or on people's wardrobes. A place where they can have a good time and relax while the menu is still approachable enough for adults and children." The wine menu will feature about 24 options, with bottles starting at $36 and going up to $120, with the average bottle being around $65. There will also be sake options, craft cocktails, 3 frozen drinks, including a frosé, Asian-inspired yuzu margarita, and Vietnamese coffee, which is one of Heitz's favorite drinks. The restaurant also is receiving an enormous pneumatic dumpling maker from Asia, he added. "I have made so many dumplings, and the employees get tired of making dumplings because it's a lot of fine hand movement," he said. Opal's Table General Manager Lori Salas said that if they open an Asian restaurant, they would need to find a dumpling machine. Heitz decided to name the new endeavor Mr. Chip's Kitchen because his friend's child would ask him if he would make Mr. Chip's Chinese food when they would see each other. "It became so ubiquitous," he said. He named the restaurant, really. The Bites. Hook and Reel Cajun Seafood and Bar is now open at 2215 North Midland Drive, Suite 2A, for takeout, delivery, and dine-in. Hours of operation are 11 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. Sunday through Saturday, and 11 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday. For more information, visit https://hookreel.com/location/Midland/. Venezia Restaurant is expanding. Behind the atrium apothecary cabinet filled with empty prisoner wine bottles, there is a space that has served as a workshop for the past 30 years. The restaurant is expanding into the space to offer more dining and special event services, according to a Facebook post. Seance will host its third pop-up February 21st. The menu hasn't yet been announced, but check out seancemtx.com/events for further details. Shrimp Fest has been announced for February 28th from 5:30 to 11:30 p.m. at the Ector County Coliseum. The annual fundraiser for the Ellen Noel Art Museum will have a silent and live auction. Tickets are $50 in advance and $55 at the door. Visit www.noelartmuseum.org/shrimpfest to purchase tickets. Dickie's Barbecue releases Behind the Barbecue, Recipes, Cocktails, and Tall Tales cookbook. This is the brand's second cookbook, which is now available online through the Barbecue at Home website. The Texas-style barbecue brand's new cookbook was created with the help of Southwestern Publishing House and includes favorite recipes from Dickie's family members, employees, and franchise owners, according to a press release. El Burrito has started serving breakfast all day on Saturdays. The restaurant is now open on Mondays as well. This is the Energy page. This article is entitled Chesapeake to Buy Chief in $26 Billion Deal by Sergio Chapa, Bloomberg. Chesapeake Energy Corporation agreed to buy closely held Chief E&D Holdings LP and associated assets held by affiliates of Tug Hill Inc. for about $2.6 billion in cash and stock, marking its second multi-billion dollar acquisition since emerging from bankruptcy last year. The deal, which is expected to close by the end of the first quarter, will allow Chesapeake to increase its annual base dividend by 14% starting in the second quarter, according to a statement Tuesday. Shares rose as much as 3.7% in New York. The company also agreed to sell its Powder River Basin assets in Wyoming to Continental Resources, Inc. for approximately $450 million in cash. The chief purchase grows Chesapeake's footprint in the Marcellus Shale of Pennsylvania, the largest gas play in the U.S. The country's gas sector faces increasing pressure from investors to consolidate in a bid to scale up, cut costs, and grow production without drilling new wells. But large acquisitions usually mean taking on significant debt, creating financial risks for drillers if oil and gas prices tumble. Chesapeake has made M&A plays, announcing last year a $2.2 billion deal to buy rival gas driller Vine Energy, Inc. The Vine and Chief deals together help the company grow output, a key management push since exiting Chapter 11 protection in February 2021. In less than a year, we have achieved our goal of refocusing and high-grading our portfolio around our core assets, positioning us to generate meaningful returns for shareholders, Chesapeake Chief Executive Officer Nick Dell'Osso said in the statement. The deal is expected to immediately increase the company's operating and free cash flow, while growing its Marcellus gas production capacity by up to 200 million cubic feet a day. This article is entitled Strong Demand Drives Rally by Devika Krishnakumar and Sheila Taubin, Bloomberg. Oil prices rallied Tuesday after the biggest one-day tumble this year, with traders refocusing on the outlook for strong demand and the risk that a Russia-Ukraine conflict could disrupt supplies. West Texas Intermediate futures settled above $85 a barrel as fears about fresh lockdowns and a hit to global demand due to the Omicron variant eased. Prices have whipsawed as the U.S. Federal Reserve prepares for interest rate increases, hammering equity markets, while Russia builds troops along the border with Ukraine, prompting supply jitters in Europe. Crude prices are soaring on expectations that an already tight oil market could see geopolitical risks exacerbate the current imbalance, said Ed Moya, Oanda's senior market analyst for the Americas. The risks are not just with the Russia-Ukraine border, but also include Iran nuclear talks and also North Korea. WTI paired gains after the market closed following the U.S. announcement that it's loaning 13.4 million barrels of oil to multiple firms in an effort by the Biden administration to calm the sharp rally in crude prices. In recent months, oil bears have retreated with speculators turning more bullish amid lower stock supplies. Crude rallied to a seven-year high last week as global consumption remained strong in the face of the fast-spreading but milder Omicron variant. While inventories usually grow early in the year, traders are fretting that by the Northern Hemisphere's summer, when demand typically rises, stockpiles may be too low to prevent a jump in prices. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, January 26th. Daniel Hughes. January 19, 2022, our lives became a little less colorful, a tad less fun, and a great deal sadder. Family and friends regretfully announce our beloved father, grandfather, great-grandfather, and brother, Daniel Sonny E. Hughes, passed away peacefully at home in Midland. Daniel was born June 28, 1956, in Fort Stockton, to Albert E. Hughes and Muriel Ann Hughes. Daniel was preceded in death by his grandparents, Louise and Myra Cranfill, his father Albert E. Hughes, his mother Ann Shaw, his brother Stephen Hughes, and his niece Christiane Cox. He is survived and missed by his sister, Deborah Hughes Deal, and husband Ray of Corpus Christi, his brothers Bobby Edge and Jesse Hughes, daughter Cody Peck and husband Eric, daughter Mandy Hughes Hendricks and husband John, as well as multiple grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and extended family from West Texas to Florida. Cremation arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Ellen Robinson. Ellen Robinson gained her heavenly wings on Friday, January 21st, after a well-fought battle with Alzheimer's. Martha Ellen Wafer Robinson was born on January 19, 1933, to William Clyde and Katharina Harris Wafer. Ellen was preceded in death by her parents and her husband, Carl. She is survived by her three children, Carl Price Robinson II and wife Kathy Ann of Midland, her daughter Catherine Lee Marug and husband Jeff of Bangs, her daughter Martha Blake Andrews and husband Jerry of Ira Ann, also four grandchildren and multiple nieces and nephews. Services will be held at First United Methodist Church in Marfa on Saturday, January 29th at 1 p.m. A private family burial at the cemetery will follow the service. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations to Legacy Ranch Memory Care, 4800 Briarwood Avenue, Midland, 79707, with a memo noted to the Activity Fund. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Elsie Clee Addy. Elsie Clee Addy, age 96, of Midland, passed away on Friday, January 21st. Elsie was born January 25, 1925. She is survived by her daughter, Nanette Trumbull, and husband, Keith. along with several nieces and nephews. Her son, Cecil E. Addy, and wife, Ning Ya, her sister, Lara Lou Wilson, and brother, Jack Fraser. Viewing will be held at Ella's Funeral Home on January 25th from 4 to 8 p.m. Graveside service will take place January 26th in Spur, Texas, at Spur Memorial Cemetery at 11 a.m. Fond memories and expression of sympathy may be shared at www.ellisfunerals.com. Frances Renz. Frances W. Renz, age 87, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, January 23rd. A visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, January 27th at Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Services will be 10 a.m. on Friday, January 28th at the Nallie Pickle and Welch Chapel. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Frances was born on July 28, 1934, in Plainfield, New Jersey, to Lewis and Edna Timpson. Frances is survived by her daughter, Sharon Sorrells Daniel, and her son, Paul Renz Gloria. She was also survived by 6 grandchildren and 8 great-grandchildren. Frances was preceded in death by her parents, Lewis and Edna Timpson, and her husband, Frederick. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the Alzheimer's Association of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Robert Guerrero. Robert Guerrero of Midland passed away on January 22nd. Memorial service will be Wednesday, January 26th at 7 p.m. at Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Robert was born on March 5, 1963, in Chicago, Illinois, to Andrew Guerrero and Diamantina Borrego. He is survived by his wife of 22 years, Deborah Guerrero, a son, Daniel Fiasana, and daughter, Sarah Guerrero, as well as 2 granddaughters. He is also survived by 3 brothers, Mike Martinez, Matthew Borrego, and Jimmy Borrego, 3 sisters, Virginia Guerrero, Anita Gatlin, and Debbie Cruz, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by 3 brothers. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Jose Luis Faez. Jose Luis Faez, 64, of Midland, passed away on January 20th. Cremation services have been arranged by family. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Lynette Four. Lynette Four of Odessa died January 15th in Midland. There are no services scheduled at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Willie D. Glover. Willie D. Glover, 86, of Midland, passed away on January 21st. Visitation will be held on Saturday, January 29th, from 12 p.m. until 4 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, January 26, 2022. County Attorney Addresses Game Rooms. ARPA Funding Item Pulled from Agenda Prior to Meeting by Kim Smith from OA News. Although the county's existing ordinance concerning game rooms does a pretty good job, Ector County Attorney Lee McClendon told commissioners Tuesday he has several ideas on how to improve it. For example, McClendon said he is in favor of keeping them 1,500 feet from neighborhoods instead of the current 300 feet and 1,500 feet from each other. He'd also like to require them to have an exterior window in the front and ban them from having coverings or tent on the windows to help law enforcement agencies in monitoring their activities. In addition, McClendon said he'd also like to restrict the businesses from having more than 50 games operating at any one time, and limiting their hours to 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Sunday through Thursday, and 8 a.m. to midnight Friday and Saturday. Last week, the Odessa City Council instructed City Attorney Natasha Brooks to send a letter to County Judge Debbie Hayes, McClendon, and all the county commissioners asking them for their input on proposed game room ordinances and giving them a February 15 deadline. The council wants to join forces with commissioners to help address the proliferation of game rooms throughout the county and the corresponding problems some of them are causing local law enforcement. On Tuesday, McClendon says he agrees with Mayor Javier Hoven, who is advocating for more stringent requirements. Gambling and promoting gambling are still illegal under Texas law, and law enforcement officers do have the authority to make arrests, McClendon said. City and county ordinances are meant to make sure those who own and operate game rooms are following the law. They're to help officers be watchdogs, he said. When Commissioner Mike Gardner suggested raising application fees expressly to hire more law enforcement officers, McClendon said the total amount raised overall probably wouldn't be sufficient. The county's 12-page ordinance was passed in 2018, he said. It includes a lengthy application process and requires the game room operators to not only have video surveillance, but to hand it over to law enforcement officers without requiring a warrant. The county attorney said he'd be reluctant to limit the total number of game rooms in the county because state laws don't expressly say counties have that right. Existing game owners might be required to come into line with certain aspects of the newly amended ordinance, but not others, McClendon said. For example, they could be required to remove window tint and coverings, but they likely couldn't be forced to move, he said. In the near future, McClendon said he'll be speaking with Odessa City Attorney Natasha Brooks about the city's proposed ordinance and recommending a date for a public hearing on the county's proposed changes. Although the commissioners were expected to hear recommendations for a firm to help the county with ARPA funds, the matter was not discussed. Following the meeting, Hayes and Commissioner Greg Simmons said McClendon advised the commissioners over the weekend not to discuss the matter at Tuesday's meeting because it wasn't properly listed on the county's agenda. Agenda item 13 merely stated to consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to discuss any and all issues related to COVID-19. It did not mention contracts, and it should have, Simmons said. The item will be placed on the court's next meeting agenda, they said. UTPB gets reskilling grant from board by OA News. The Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board has awarded $26.2 million dollars in grant funding to 60 Texas higher education institutions, including University of Texas Permian Basin. The grants are designed to help Texans access higher-paying jobs through completion of a post-secondary credential. Grants were awarded through two programs: the Texas Reskilling Support Fund Grant Program, awarded $10,425,000 through 17 grants to 24 institutions, and $15,826,990 was awarded in 43 grants to 42 institutions through the Accelerating Credentials of Purpose and Value grant programs, a news release detailed. To remain competitive, we must lead the nation at producing credentials of value that meet the needs of our fast-growing economy, Commissioner of Higher Education Harrison Keller said in a news release. We need to emphasize the importance of credentials that are affordable, attainable, and bring value to the lives of all Texans. Governor Abbott and the Texas legislature recognized early in the pandemic that raising the bar in higher education would be central to the state's economy recovery and were grateful for their continued support. The grants are supported by a portion of the $362 million in Governor's Emergency Educational Relief funding that has been allocated to the THECB. Awardees were selected through a competitive process and were notified of their awards in December 2021. The Texas Reskilling Support Fund grant provides emergency educational support to students whose education has been disrupted by the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as displaced workers seeking training to return to the workforce and students who stopped out of higher education prior to the pandemic but are looking to return. This was the third round of Texas Reskilling Support Fund grants, with 65 grantees receiving over $27 million in rounds 1 and 2. The latest round of awards include individual grants to the University of Texas Permian Basin, $410,000. Quick hits. Free drive-through COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR test drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, test will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. The City of Odessa, in partnership with Docs Health, have scheduled drive-through COVID-19 testing from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Sunday at the UTPB Community Sports Fields parking lot located at 191 and Loop 338. The entrance will be located on the 191 Access Road, 42nd Street, and exit will be on the Loop 338. No appointments needed, however, online registration is available. Testing is subject to daily availability of materials. For more information, call the Docs Health Call Center at 267-362-5207. Tom Segura World Tour. Actor, comedian, writer, podcast host Tom Segura will bring his I'm Coming Everywhere World Tour at 7 p.m. today at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market, 1788 Midland. Doors open at 6 p.m. Pediatric COVID-19 Pfizer Clinic. The Ector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Avenue, has scheduled a pediatric COVID-19 Pfizer clinic from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday. First and second doses for ages 5 to 11 years old. The clinic is first come, first serve. Vaccines are free. For more information, call 432-498-4141. Read to Felix. The Ector County Library Children's Department has scheduled Read to Felix at 4 p.m. Thursday at Third Floor Auditorium at the library, 321 West 5th Street. Felix is a therapy dog that loves to be read to. Waterworks Receptions. A two-part reception for Waterworks will take place Thursday from 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. at the University of Texas of the Permian Basin, Nancy Fryer Cardoza Gallery, and from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Ellen Noel Art Museum. An artist talk is scheduled at 7 p.m. at the museum. Selected works will be displayed at both the Cardozier Gallery and at the museum through April 24th. UTPB will also be hosting the exhibition Waterways on Loan from the Smithsonian Institute's Museum on Main Street program. Motown Experience. I Love My Selfie, 3211 West Wadley Avenue, Midland, has scheduled Motown Experience featuring vocalist Mi Esther Wright and Kaylee Sims from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday and Friday. Seating is limited. Wild for Wildlife Family Science Night. Petroleum Museum, 1500 West I-20, Midland, has scheduled a Wild for Wildlife Family Science Night from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday. Admission is free. Museum members gain early admission from 6 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. For more information, call 432-683-4403. Chocolate Decadence Fundraiser Gala. The Aphasia Center of West Texas has scheduled the 16th Annual Chocolate Decadence Fundraiser Gala at 6 p.m. Friday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. There will be decadent chocolate treats, delicious food, craft cocktails, enticing live and silent auction items, and more. Proceeds will go to Permian Basin stroke survivors dealing with aphasia's communication challenges. Reservations are required. For reservations, to donate, or for more information, visit website aphasiawtx.org. More earthquakes hit Permian Basin by OA News. Two earthquakes hit the Odessa and Gardendale area on Tuesday, reported by EarthquakeTrack.com. The first was a 2.9 magnitude that occurred around 1:18 a.m. The second earthquake was a 2.6 magnitude that hit Gardendale at around 4:05 p.m. Obituaries by Santos Gonzalez III, Odessa. Santos was born in Marfa, Texas on December 17, 1944, to Dolores and Santos Gonzalez II. He was the only boy among five siblings. He was preceded in death by his sisters Guadalupe Aguari, Merced Aguari, and Consuelo Hernandez. He was survived by his sister Elodia Cedillo. In 1970, he married Amelia Arispe 2 months after they met. They raised two daughters together, Grace Gonzalez and Rebecca Gonzalez. He is survived by his children, Grace Gonzalez, Rebecca Gonzalez, Cynthia Romero, and Eddie Gonzalez. Viewing will be at Thursday from 5 to 8 at Frank Wilson Funeral Home with a rosary at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, January 28th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church, 1321 West Monahan Street, Odessa. followed by interment at Los Angeles section of the Ector County Cemetery. His family asked that everyone please wear a mask at all times. Andres Rafael Morales, Denton. Andres Rafael Morales, 90, of Denton, Texas, passed away peacefully at his home on Friday, January 14, 2022, surrounded by loved ones. He was born in Monterrey, Nuevo León, Mexico, on November 30, 1931, to Celserio and Inez Morales. He is preceded in death by his parents, Celserio Morales and Inez Morales, and his sister, Beatriz Garcia. Andres is survived by his wife of 65 years, brother-in-law Alonzo Garcia, 7 children and spouses, Aunt Anna Morales Gillard and Douglas Gillard, Rico Morales, David and Jennifer Morales, Daniel and Dana Morales, Marco and Renee Morales, Mary Angela Morales, and Robert and Jennifer Morales, 12 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. A memorial service followed by intermittent will be held at 10 o'clock Friday morning, the 28th of January, at St. Elizabeth and Seton Catholic Church in Odessa. Elida Oyarbides Monahans. Elida Oyarbides, 85, of Monahans, Texas, went to meet her maker January 23, 2022. She was born in Alpine, Texas. Lydia was preceded in death by both her parents, several brothers and sisters, and recently her grandson, Joshua Bingham. She is survived by her husband, Mike, 2 brothers, Eleno Cannon of Monahans and David Silvas of San Angelo, 2 sons, Gilbert and wife Paula, Adam Joe and wife Janice, 3 daughters, Grace, Donna, and Carol. She had 13 grandchildren, 24 great-grandchildren, and 1 great-great-grandchild. Visitation will be Thursday, January 27th at Harkey Funeral Home from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Funeral services will be Friday, January 28th at 2 p.m. at Grace Fellowship Church, with burial to follow at Monahans Memorial Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, please make donations in remembrance of her grandson, Joshua Clint Bingham, to a charity of your choice that supports and or researches depression and mental illness in his name. Death notices. Cherry Lynette Four, Midland. Cherry Lynette Four, 64, died Saturday, January 15th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Maya Joycelyn Hermosillo, Odessa. Maya Joycelyn Hermosillo, 21, died Saturday, January 22nd in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home. Juan C. Ramos, Odessa. Juan C. Ramos, 85, of Odessa, died Monday, January 17th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Thursday, January 27th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens Monument Section. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Viagra to Prevent Alzheimer's? Dear Dr. Roach, I recently heard about a study done by the Cleveland Clinic on Alzheimer's prevention. The results were good. 69% prevention of people who might have developed Alzheimer's. The drug that gave these results was Viagra. I mentioned this to some of my friends and they brushed it off or didn't take it seriously. I would take it if it would prevent this horrible condition. Some of my relatives have developed dementia in their later years, but I'm not sure if the drug prevents other forms of dementia. Do you know if it will be offered to the people who might be at risk? Answer. A study published in December 2021 by the Cleveland Clinic Group looked at prescription records against insurance claims data and found that those who took Viagra do have a decreased risk of insurance claims for Alzheimer's disease. The group also identified a potential mechanism of action, improved growth of brain cells, and decreased formation of an abnormal protein by which Viagra might plausibly help prevent Alzheimer's. However interesting, this is a long way from proving that Viagra reduces Alzheimer's risk, which will require a clinical trial. I do not recommend Viagra or medicines like it solely to reduce the risk of Alzheimer's or any forms of dementia.
This is the Dear Abby column. Fiancé's lady friend's pose web browsing prompts feelings of inadequacy. Dear Abby, I'm a lesbian. My girlfriend and I have been together for a couple of months now. We fell in love quickly and we're getting ready to move in together. I'm really excited about it, but an incident happened recently while we were spending time together. We were watching TV, and I noticed she was on a website looking at women wearing bikinis. At first I thought, are you serious? Right in front of me? So I looked over and asked her about it. She looked back at me and said, what? It made me feel incredibly insecure. I know she loves me, but she doesn't understand how hurt I was seeing that. It made me feel like I'm not enough. What should I tell her? Should I break up with her? Or am I wrong to feel this way? Signed, Torn in South Carolina. Dear Torn, your relationship is new. Looking at pictures of people dressed in swimming attire is hardly indicative of a porn addiction or a hint that you are not enough. Before you two move in together, you both need to talk this through, and you absolutely need to learn to deal with your feelings of insecurity, because if you don't, they could eventually drive away any of your love interests. Please, get to know each other for a longer period before taking your relationship to the next level by moving in. Dear Abby, I'm 44 and divorced. I have no kids and I live with my parents. I didn't finish college, but I do have a job in my field of study. I'm happy in my job and have some friends, and I'm content to not date anyone ever again. However, I feel like I'm a failure. I'd be embarrassed to go to a school reunion and have to tell my former classmates about my pathetic life. I was always the ambitious one in my circle of friends. I was the one who was going to make something of myself and have an amazing career, a husband, and kids. My parents are disabled, and it does help that I live with them. I pay rent, utilities, and for my own groceries. How can I convince myself that I haven't made a complete mess of my life and that my circumstances don't mean my life has been wasted? Signed, Self-Conscious in Arizona. Dear Self-Conscious, while you may not have achieved the lofty goals you set for yourself when you were younger, you are being awfully hard on yourself by calling yourself a failure. You have a job you love, in the field in which you want to work, and good friends. In order to have friends, you have to be one. I assume the reason you are content to no longer date is past relationships didn't work out. If I'm right, that makes you a member of a very large club. Please try to remain open-minded, because one day you may meet someone you can care about, and who will appreciate the value in you. And caring for your disabled parents is a heavy responsibility, and needs to take priority over a social life. A way to counteract these self-defeating negative feelings would be to concentrate every day on those things you have accomplished, rather than what you perceive to be your shortcomings, instead of comparing yourself to others. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.